For a former president of the United States, you're still awfully naive, Janey girl. He was the only man in the world whom Jane would allow to call her girl. She smiled at Robertson as they sat on the glassed-in patio of her Texas home. The spacious house was on a hillside, overlooking the large man-made LBJ Lake. Outside it was a fierce summer day, the kind that allows Texans to say they don't have to be afraid of hell. Jane kept the air conditioning comfortable but not frigid. If Robertson wanted it cooler, he had yet to ask. The old man was dressed up in a floral cowboy shirt and stiffly new jeans tucked into his fancy tooled boots. Jane was in an at-home outfit, loose-fitting slacks of light tan topped with a short-sleeved pale yellow blouse. A frosted pitcher of margaritas sat on the low table between them, next to a plate of coarse salt. Robertson held his wide-rimmed glass in both hands. Jane's was on the end table next to her chair.
"Oh, I know they're still into prostitution and smuggling and things like that," she said. "But we cleaned them out of the international banking industry years ago, and—"
Robertson shook his head. With his pop eyes and jutting beak, he sometimes reminded Jane of a turtle. He took a sip of his margarita, then said, "Look, honey, when most of the states in the Union legalized betting to the extent that they started state lotteries, did that drive the mafia out of gambling?" Without waiting for her to answer, he went on, "Hell no. When you legalized drugs, it didn't drive the crooks out of the narcotics business either. Cut their profit margins, yes, but they still sell drugs. They sell the kind you can buy legally for cheaper than the legal price, and they sell the kind you can't buy because they're too dangerous to use."
"How can they undercut the government's price?"
"They steal the stuff and then resell it."
"Oh."
"They're still into banking. More respectable now. Smarter than they used to be, almost legitimate. But they siphon billions off into their own pockets every year. The bankers just take it as part of the cost of doing business and pass on the expense to their customers."
"That wasn't going on when I was president," Jane murmured.
"Course not." Robertson's tone of voice was not quite condescending, but close enough.
"You're telling me that the mafia is now a worldwide organization?"
"Yep. Just like the corporations, the crooks have gone international. The mafia, the Yakuza gangs in Japan, the old Latin American drug cartel. They've all linked up worldwide. Wouldn't be surprised if they've wormed their way into the Big Seven up on the moon."
Jane felt angry, confused, puzzled. "But how? What do they do? How are they making their money?"
"Skimming, mostly," said Robertson.
He leaned forward to refill his glass, then twirled it in his hand to find a part of the rim that was still salted. He half-drained the glass, then smacked his lips noisily.
"Best margaritas this side of Albuquerque."
"You were telling me about skimming," Jane said gently.
"Yeah."
Robertson leaned back in his chair and half-closed his eyes. He looked as if he were going to sleep.
"Your company takes in $10, say. But somehow only 95 cents gets onto the books. The rest winds up in some crook's pocket."
"But how can they do that?"
"Lots of ways, honey. They bribe one of your employees, maybe with real money, maybe with women or drugs or something else the poor sucker thinks he wants bad enough to take the chance. Oftentimes the sucker himself comes to them for a loan."
"They're still loan sharking?"
The old man's eyes sprang wide open. "Long as banks want collateral, there will be loan sharks. Pretty often a guy will get in over his head gambling. Even legalized gambling can break your back, you know. Then he goes to the sharks and—"
Robertson banged his hand down on the arm of his chair so hard that Jane jumped.
"They've got him. At the kinds of interest rates they charge, the poor slob never gets out from under. He owes them. He either does what they tell him or they break him in half."
"So he starts to work for them?"
"Yep. It's almost all white-collar stuff now. More money stolen with a computer than with a gun any day. But there's always the threat of violence, and not just to the sucker himself. They threaten his family, too."
"That's sickening."
Robertson finished off his margarita and put the empty glass down on the table between them. "You haven't hardly touched yours."
Jane said, "How do we keep them out of the conversion program, Jeff? It's going to be tough enough to make this thing work without having the mafia leeching money out of it making everything more expensive.
And it won't be just money skimming, come to think of it, he said. You better be damned alert and watch who you contract out the work to.
What do you mean?
You've seen your share of recycling outfits that just dump the garbage in the dark of night instead of actually recycling it, haven't you?
I've prosecuted enough of them.
Well, suppose you have an organization that's got the job of replacing gasoline cars and diesel trucks with your new electric buggies. Suppose the buggies somehow get mysteriously hijacked, and later on they show up halfway across the world selling for 10 times the price the GEC has set.
I don't see how anybody could get away with that.
Robertson shrugged his frail shoulders. Maybe I picked a poor example. But things like that can happen. You better keep a sharp eye out.
Jane picked up her drink and took a sip of it without taking her eyes off Robertson. At last she asked, Jeff, will you keep a sharp eye out for me?
He cocked his head slightly to one side as if he hadn't quite heard her.
You know so much more about this than I do. Will you be my eyes and ears? I'll give you complete authority to go anywhere, see anything. You'll report directly to me and no one else.
I'm an old man, Janie. I can't go flitting around the world the way I used to.
Then I'll see to it that you have access to all the program's files. If you see anything suspicious, you can alert me.
Frowning. Hell, I'll be spending 29 hours a day in front of a damned computer screen.
I need your help, Jane pleaded.
His frown melted. Well, I guess I ought to put my mouth where my money is.
You'll do it?
I'll do some of it. Nobody will be able to keep track of everything. This danged project of yours is going to be just too big for any one person to watch over. That's what they're counting on. That's one of the advantages they have.
But you'll help.
On one condition. He raised a bony finger. This is just between you and me. Nobody else in the loop. Nobody. I don't want that Gaetano guy knowing about this. I'd be dead in half an hour once he found out.
Jane frowned at him. Do you actually think...
Her voice trailed off. Sure as God made little green apples, honey, said Jeff Robertson. He's one of them.
Zach Freiberg squinted in the unaccustomed glare of the studio lights.
If you think this is bad, said the elderly man who would interview him, you should have been around before the low light level cameras were available. Damned lighting would melt your makeup.
Zach knew his interviewer was trying to put him at ease. Television was new and unnerving to the scientist, even this little local public access show. He knew that if Dan Randolph were still running Astro, he could have stayed in his lab in Pasadena. Dan himself would have handled the PR, and been much better at it.
I'm a planetary geochemist, not a TV personality, he had told the eager young woman who had phoned him.
Rumors of the greenhouse cliff had leaked out, of course. No matter how tight-lidded the authorities in Paris tried to maintain on the story, their very own extraordinary actions against Astro and the others of the Big Seven had started the rumor mills running. Her bright eyes glittering like a snake's, she had answered, But you're the man who discovered this greenhouse cliff, aren't you? I got your name from a source in the GEC's office in Manhattan. With a mixture of flattery and cajolery, she enticed Zach to the TV studio in the old run-down area of Studio City, where he now sat in a fake leather chair up on a carpeted platform, blinking at the lights that all seemed aimed straight into his eyes. Out among the cameras positioned on the studio floor sat a TV monitor screen that showed Zach's own face, looking flustered and unhappy.
This is going to be taped, you know, said his interviewer as a pair of technicians clipped nearly invisible microphones to their lapels and wormed a wireless receiver into the man's left ear. Ignoring them, he went on, It won't matter if you hesitate or fluff an answer. We can start over. So don't worry about a thing.
Zach ran a nervous hand through his wiry red hair.
Don't worry about a thing, he repeated silently. The whole world in danger of annihilation, and he tells me not to worry.
In five, called a voice from the dimness out on the floor of the studio.
Wet your lips,
someone hissed at Zach. He ran his tongue over his lower lip just as the interviewer began.
Good evening. I'm Herman George, and this is Newsmakers, the program that takes you behind the headlines